Well, I appreciate those that are sticking around. I get the dubious honor being the last speaker on the last panel on the last day, so definitely appreciate those that are still around. I'm going to do my best to be thorough yet efficient. Some of the information Gene already covered, some of the information others yesterday have covered, so I'm going to hit kind of some of the main points that haven't been covered here today around overall the export markets. The key thing here, just looking historically, this is a chart from 2002 to 2014. You can see a dramatic increase in ethanol exports as of 2010. It was a structural shift in the export market that happened in 2010, which is causing ethanol demand to no longer be driven solely by the U.S. blender. Because ethanol is such a high percentage or ethanol exports are such a high percentage of the total, demand is not solely in the hands of the U.S. blender. That's obviously a good thing. It creates new opportunities for our industry, but it comes with some complexities in terms of import quotas, different specs, different market factors that need to be considered, things like sugar price, exchange rates, ocean-going freight, different things that our industry has never really had to focus on until we started exporting both distillers' grains and ethanol. Just real quickly by port, just to show where the stuff's coming out of, you can see here, coming out of the ports, you can see here ports to Canada is the chart on the left. You can see growth driven largely by mandates. It accounts for about, in 2013, about 50% of our exports left ports going north into Canada. The other main port is the middle chart, which is Houston, Galveston, Texas. It's the Gulf. Again, that's the other 50% effectively of the exports that are coming out of the country today are coming out of the Gulf Coast. You can see New York has dwindled here over the years. 2011 was a strong year. Simply because we exported 1.2 billion gallons and 200 million of that went to Europe. Since the closure of Europe, the main ports of exports are coming out of the Gulf Coast. So, again, I'm a picture and graph guy, as you'll see as we go through here. Just shows a nice picture of where everything's going. You've got Canada, as Gene already mentioned. They are the largest importer of U.S.-based ethanol, as well as they're rateable. Canada takes anywhere between 26 and 28 million gallons per month, every month, all of last year. It has maintained that consistency through this year with some logistics blips that affected that a little bit. But they are a very consistent rateable supply driven by mandates. The other point I want to make on this is the Philippines. That's the second largest outside of kind of the industrial usage. Philippines again increased their mandate in 2013. They went to a 10% blend mandated into the Philippines, and you've seen some growth there to 52 million gallons. And then the balance of these markets, mainly Peru, Brazil, and Middle East are your three next largest, and those are discretionary markets. It's not mandate-driven. It is purely price and economic-driven. So before I get into the next couple of slides in terms of 14, I wanted to hit a little bit upon the supply and demand and what drives margins in the U.S. specifically. Historically, it's been driven by domestic gasoline blenders and fundamentally the mandates, which because of economics, we were blending more than the mandated levels since 2007. So driven initially by mandates, spurred on by economics, up until you got to about an E10 blend. And you can see the chart to the right here is a green line. That shows the ethanol blend, the blend rate. You can see you get to 2011, 2012. You've kind of peaked at that E10 level. So the industry historically has been very driven off mandates and economics up until you got to E10. Once you got to E10, now ethanol demand domestically is purely driven by gasoline demand. Ethanol is 10% of 98.5% of gasoline blended in the country. And so for every gallon of gasoline demand is another gallon or 10% of that is ethanol demand. So that obviously poses some seasonal patterns that we're seeing happening. You get into peak summer driving season versus winter summer driving season can have a variance in gasoline demand of upwards of 10%. So pretty large swings around gas demand. The second thing is the thing that we're really talking about here today on this panel is the international trade and the international trade flow. This is a significant driver to U.S. supply and demand and specifically the balance sheet. The chart to the left just shows the percentage of import-export flows as a total percentage of production. So you can see, again, that 2010 time period and beyond, the percentage of import-export flows as a percentage of total production has gone up. It's close to that 8 to 12% range, which seems relatively small. But when you look at a balance sheet and you look at gasoline demand saturated at E10, right? It is that 8 to 12% is the tail wagging the dog on the other 90% of production that's happening here domestically. So it is a key ingredient to the overall balance sheet of U.S. ethanol. So I figured we'd take a couple scenarios here, just do a little scenario analysis on impacts to our current inventory situation. So the chart here to the left shows effective as of June. That's our inventory. It's the three-year range is that blue band that goes all the way out through May of 2015. So what we've done is taken a three-year average range of our inventory, effective starting in June, and then we wanted to run some scenarios, right, just to highlight the importance to the balance sheet that the export window has. So in scenario one, it's the black chart, or the black line. We took a 30 million gallon a month scenario. So from June forward through till next year, May of next year of 2015, we said we're going to produce at the current run rates, and we're going to export 30 million gallons ratably a month. That effectively consists of Canadian demand and the northeast of Brazil's pretty consistent ratable demand as well at 5 million-ish, 6 million gallons a month. Gets you right around to that 30 million a month, 360 million-ish annualized. You can see the black line by August and September, you're very quickly outside of the three-year average range of inventory in the U.S. Big problem in that scenario, right? You build into Q4 and Q1 to levels we've never seen, 35 days stocks to day's use. So let's go to the next scenario. Next one down is we took 62 million gallons. So how do we arrive at that number? Effectively, that's the 12-month average. It's the last 12 months of the year's average ethanol exports. Gets you right around 62 million. That pegs annual ethanol exports right around that 750, 760 million gallon mark. That is the red line. Again, you can see as you go throughout the year, June, July, August, September, you're okay through summer driving season. You get into Q4 and you're into winter driving season. You're still exporting that 62 million a month. You begin to build inventory to a level going into Q1 to, again, levels that are concerning for an ethanol producer. And then finally, we'll take a third scenario. So you said, okay, in 2011, we exported 1.2 billion gallons. Now, granted, 200 plus million of that 1.2 billion gallons that we exported was to Europe, which is no longer open or available to the U.S., at least at current dynamics. But that put aside, we said, let's assume we do 100 million gallons a month starting in June, and we do that through May of next year. It's 1.2 billion gallons annualized. You can see the yellow line. You actually draw stocks. Right, so you're going through summer gas driving season. You don't have enough product to supply both the domestic market because of gas demand and the export market at 100 million gallons. Gets you through fourth quarter, and you begin to build stocks into the first quarter, again, because you're in the winter doldrums of gasoline demand season. So just a couple different scenarios there to play out. Exports and the importance of exports to the overall balance sheet. Obviously, we think based on this chart to the bottom left, and as we've already heard many people talk about today, it is the most competitively priced ethanol on the planet today, and it is the most competitive octane on the planet today. This chart just shows MTBE is the blue line, and the green line is Platts Chicago ethanol. Since 2010, really, it's been about a dollar under the price of MTBE. So it prices very well into the global market, both from an ethanol perspective and from an octane perspective, which would support this kind of 800 to a billion gallon export scenario, which puts you somewhere in between that kind of red and yellow line in that range, depending on when those exports come. So last couple slides here, I just wanted to talk about export market changes from 13 to 14. Again, I like these little circle dots because I think it shows where volume is flowing. So this is simply the change from the previous slide that I showed you in 13 to 14. So where is their growth? Again, we talked about lower grain prices. Ethanol is very competitively priced. So most of the growth that happens here in 2014 is going to be discretionary markets. It's markets like Brazil. It's markets like the Middle East. You're seeing a little bit of bump in the Philippines and in Peru, in Canada, two of the mandated markets, and you see a little bit of bump in India. Again, purely driven by the economic incentive to blend this product into their fuel stream. So finally, just wanted to kind of close on a couple of bullish and bearish factors, not necessarily for the industry, but for the export market itself. Some of the bullish factors, again, we're extremely competitive. in the global markets, both from an ethanol and an octane perspective. There are largely untapped markets in India and Eastern Asia. I would also say that those are fairly unknown at this point, but they are untapped. There will be essentially no imports coming in from Brazil, given current price parity to Brazilian product and the forward curves that exist. So that's certainly supportive. And even if there was some sort of RFS legislational change that would require an advanced biofuel to come in, biodiesel is still more economic than Brazilian product coming into the U.S., at least for the foreseeable 12 months. So even if something did legislatively change, it would still be a domestically produced biodiesel that would probably fill that advanced bucket. Some of the bearish factors, we have to find new demand. As an industry, over the last couple of years, we like to talk about the export market and where this demand and its cheap price octane. We have to go find it. It does not exist today. We are knocking on doors in little tutus in India as a company trying to figure out and introduce ethanol. These people don't know what it is. The people that know what it is are blending ethanol. They're blending it and have been for the last couple of years. This new incremental demand that we have to buy into from the U.S. to get over a billion gallons is completely new. These are blenders that don't know what ethanol is and don't know how to handle it, and there's a fairly large learning curve, and I think as an industry, we kind of need to take that into consideration, specifically with some of Gene's comments. Get involved in trade organizations, get out there, get on the road, go see these people. It takes a lot of resources to get out and go to some of these places and introduce this product. And the other bearish factor is some of the product from Brazil does remain a factor in some select smaller markets simply because of logistical constraints. So overall, definitely some nice bullish, you know, impetus that exists out there going into the next 12 months, but there are some factors that need to be at work over the next 6 to 12 months as well to keep us relatively balanced overall. And that is it. I tried to be quick. I know I'm the only thing standing in front of you guys at lunch and the end of this conference, so I was trying to be quick and brief. I appreciate you guys hanging around.